Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Living Well. Today, I just have to want to reflect. I did not even realize that I had been doing podcasts now for almost 5 years. In fact, next month will be my fifth year. And I've been on and off at times for certain situations, but the guest today, she is here, and I am just so delighted. I know you hear me say this about everyone being so special, but this person is definitely special to me. We have a very intimate connection, if I should say. The first episode that she did with me was actually just the second episode of the entire podcast series. And if you'd like to hear her, I have a link in today's description. It's entitled Self-Care, an Important Link to De-Stressing. And it's just so funny. We were chatting right before we officially went on air, and I was so hyped about something that I think I need to listen to that again myself. But without further ado, I'd like to welcome Jalita Bailey Vasco. When she was here 5 years ago, she was just Jalita Bailey. Her namesake is mine. She happens to be my one and only birth daughter. And I'm just going to read the episode information for those who may not have seen it. Jalita is a senior program manager at Jobs for the Future. She is responsible for strategic communication, coaching, and implementation for the learning unit at large, and manages content and operations development for JFF's semi annual post-secondary state network meetings. Jalita also works with JFF Labs, project managing employer-led initiatives that are focused on corporate social responsibility and impact. Before joining JFF, Jalita worked at Bunker Hill Community College in Boston, where she scaled, managed, and provided training for a learning community peer mentor program framed in culturally inclusive pedagogy. She also co-chaired BHCC's Professional Development Committee and served on several other committees. She has also worked as a part-time academic advisor at Roxbury Community College in Boston, and she spent 4 years at Eastern Nazarene College in Quincy, Massachusetts. There, she wore a variety of hats within student affairs, contributing to initiatives that were related to residential life, multicultural affairs, new student orientation, the first year experience, and much more. In fact, Jalita was at Quincy, at the Quincy Eastern Nazarene College when she came on 5 years ago. Welcome, Jalita Bailey. It's a privilege to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure and a great opportunity to be with you, Mom.
Oh, thank you. I don't often get someone to call me Mom, so that's always a delightful title. I think that second to wife, that's my best title. And of course, I share that now alongside Nana, with your niece and soon-to-be new sibling. Okay, so we're continuing our conversation entitled Workplace Communication. Today is part two. Next week or 2 weeks from now, we'll finish up the series with the third part. But today's segment is looking at women and their impact on education and economic advancement. To start us off, Please tell the audience what JFF, or Jobs for the Future, in just a short synopsis. Tell us what that's about. And I did fail to mention to the audience that it, too, is located. Well, it's located around the country. But am I correct that the headquarters is in Boston?
Yes, that's correct. And then we also have an office in Washington, D.C., and then one in California.
Okay, so take it away. Let them know. Give them a synopsis of what JFF is all about, this big think tank.
Okay. JFF works at the intersection of the post-secondary world, as well as workforce development and helping reform and refine policies, as well as scale programs that are geared toward making education more accessible to populations that haven't been kind of put at the forefront of our country's priorities. So
okay.
We also work with workforce development in terms of apprenticeships or helping those who are in low-skill jobs kind of revamp their program so that if folks do enter a low-skill work environment, when they leave, they actually have some kind of they don't leave with the same thing that they came with. So basically they have like another credential that they can apply to their field or another field. So we want to make sure that they're prepared to be successful and continue growing in the field that they choose, as well as growing in their finances so that they can support themselves as well as their families. So we serve as kind of like advisors, I would say, to a lot of these programs. We also do on the groundwork in terms of implementation. So that's like high level what we do.
Okay. That sounds great, at least from my perspective. When you interface with the colleges and I'm assuming with the private and possibly the public sectors or whatever sectors that you interface with, do you find receptivity? Do you find resistance? Describe some of that to us.
Sure. So I would say that it's both and. As being an on-the-ground student affairs professional, I would say that, unfortunately, within the college realm, sometimes it takes a really long time to get new ideas in place with administration within higher education or among faculty. So oftentimes the systems within higher ed or the post-secondary field in general, they're, in my view, about 10 years behind where we actually are. And so you have to really work on buy-in and what's the value add, what are metrics that will help improve or make what's being offered even more relevant. And so I think as long as you have key champions that you're working with, I think that's key in terms of helping advance our agenda within JFF. I can give an example that one of the companies we work with is Tyson's, as in the chicken company, on the workforce development side. And so we work with some of the workers who, like I was saying, like the low-skill jobs. So we have folks within Tyson's who even, like, they pluck chickens after the chickens are dead. So it's like, what can we do to make sure once they're ready to move on from that position, to make sure that they have a new skill so that they don't have to go looking for another job where not all they're able to do, but they're not able to bring more expertise to the table. So we want to make sure that their skill sets are relevant as our future continues to advance. So in that kind of situation, the company that we work with, they have been very receptive to our advisement. And then there are others that are not. They're a little more focused on metrics and numbers versus making an impact and being able to build a program that will be successful and really serve the communities that we are trying to reach.
Wow, you know, I didn't realize that you had that type of a depth and breadth. I'm glad I have you on the show because I'm learning a new facet of your responsibility. I would think, first of all, I'd like to applaud, you know, maybe we shouldn't be mentioning them by name, but we've already done it. So I'd like to give Tyson a huge shout out and applause for being so receptive and having the vision to join forces with JFF to make advances both for their employees as individuals and for the communities that they work in. I think that is just overwhelmingly fantastic. And so
thank you,
Jalita, and please thank JFF on my behalf and on my listeners' behalf, because that's huge. That is absolutely huge. I was thinking, well, there's no need to go into what I was thinking. I had a whole different, not that what I'm thinking isn't part of what you're doing, but I had more of a limited view, more college and JFF working hand in hand to prepare the students to go forward, as opposed to the all-encompassing, some of that, but also, like you said, post-secondary. So that is marvelous. I just think it's absolutely, astoundingly marvelous. So I feel even better about JFF. I had given them the thumbs up anyway, but now they even have more of my regard. Okay, so now one of the things, I want to move on real quick because our time will go before we even know. We're almost at the halfway mark now. By the way, listeners, I didn't tell you on the front side, and I hope this doesn't detract from anything you all have planned today, but I am going to go 30 minutes today. Okay, so one of the things that you are known for by colleagues and by some of your past work experiences is the fact that you do a good job at facilitating difficult conversations. I think that that is quite a, not only quite an excellent trait, but quite noteworthy acknowledgement that you would be known for such. So let's talk about that. When can you give us a situation? I like the fact that you shared the last one, a situation involving a time or two when you had to deal with a difficult conversation, you know, be a facilitator for that or whatever it was that you did to help that along. Can you share?
Sure, absolutely. I think one of the key times that I facilitated a difficult conversation was back when our president of the United States won the election. So it was the morning of when everyone found out who had won. And the work community that I was in had kind of a lot of feelings about it in terms of the feeling of disappointment for a variety of reasons that I won't go into.
Yes.
It was funny because the coworker that I was co-facilitating the conversation with, when we were asked to co-facilitate a conversation around like how to have an inclusive environment for students, we were not aware that that was going to be the day where we would find out who our leader of the country would be. So,
wow.
It was interesting because we went in to the conversation with a lot of people just stunned because they're like, we thought a woman was going to be our next president, and then, like I was saying, all these other emotions about who got into office. And so it's like, how do we have a meaningful conversation about having an inclusive campus where we are welcoming for everyone, wherever they're coming from, while we just found out the news about who's going to be the new leader of the United States. So that was difficult, and that what we were planning to talk about kind of got deterred, but it was still a difficult conversation because we had to take it into consideration just the lay of the room. And then we also had to think of, you know, how can we make this a safe space for our DACA students? How can we make sure that we as administration are continuing to keep one another accountable in terms of constantly being in a state of learning of how to make sure that students feel like this is their home away from home. One of the schools that I worked at served a very large population of international students. So I think that was a huge part of us wanting to make sure students felt supported in order to complete their studies, and not just complete them, but complete them well. Oftentimes within schools, a lot of students don't have the benefits of having a support system where they don't have to work, or they don't have to worry about how am I going to make sure I'm there for my children or a sick family member. So not only are they trying to advance themselves, but they have all of these out-of-sight responsibilities. So our perspective was also, how can we help support them in these ways? So anyway, from having like a daycare on campus to a professor being understanding of a student having to bring their kid to class at certain times. So like there are a variety of ways. So the difficult conversation more so involves, okay, with this new president, in terms of how will this make us be a more inclusive campus? What can we do with what's happening in the political world to continue to challenge ourselves in this way? So I often go about difficult conversations through asking a lot of questions, through listening, through providing for times of silence for personal reflection, through having a multiple of venues for people to express themselves. So I often do this through writing, through art, like if you want to draw something or sketch it, whatever is going to help you collect your thoughts and be able to voice your mindset that is hopefully a growth mindset as a value add to this conversation. Let's make sure we support everyone in the room to do that. So hopefully that answered your question. If that wasn't a good example, I can think of another one. But I would say
that was good.
Okay.
I don't know if you could speak to maybe a one-on-one difficult interchange. Would you have anything to add if it was a one-on-one situation?
I think the thing that I would add is always seeking the point of view of the person that I'm talking to in the difficult conversation, and to just listen with empathy, to not cut people off, to also be strong in terms of whatever it is that I believe. Yes, my beliefs can shift based upon the conversation, but being able to bring a confidence and, okay, like I am here to understand you, but I also want us to be able to come to a mutual understanding about whatever the situation is. So yes, that would be something else I would add.
That's excellent. that's the basis actually of communication. You have a message, you have a sender, you have a receiver. Sometimes there's interference. There's always some kind of noise, and I'm just going to call it interference. We have to back up sometimes, push away, stand up, whatever is required, so that, as you say, we can engage and attribute some empathy and vision for what the other person is saying or trying to say, and not get so consumed by what we're saying and trying to make our point, but hearing, actually hearing, so that we can respond in kind. So thank you for that. Now I want to look at you. I had planned to have a quick break, but we have about 10 minutes and we're going to have to be out of here. So we're going to forego that break. And I'd like to look at you specifically in terms of, we're talking about communication in the workplace as it affects women in particular. So do you feel that over your career thus far that you have been supported? I'm going to ask a twofold question, and you can answer it in any way you choose, obviously. But do you, first and foremost, do you feel that you as an employee, one, a female employee, two, and then we have the overriding profile for you. Not only are you a female, but you started your career at a young age, and you're still not old. So age comes into play, race comes into play, culture may come into play, your politics may come into play. So I want you to just think about that in the context of all of those attributes, or some of them, whichever ones you want to dig out. And if you have, we want to hear about that. And if you have not, we want to hear about that, and maybe even how you have handled it. So the floor is yours.
Thank you. These are some deep questions.
Well, you know you have a deep mom. You of all people should know that.
Oh, yes. Thank you for asking them. I will start with the first question. Sorry, were you going to say something?
I was going to say, did you want me to chop it up some? But you seem like you're ready to tackle it, so go ahead.
Okay, yes. No, I was writing them down while you're talking. So the first question was, have I felt supported as a female in the workplace? That is a great question. I would say that at the beginning of my career, I felt supported, specifically under the branch of a female, under the branch of the other factors that you mentioned, which kind of talks about, or which kind of correlates to intersectionality, I would say, in a sense. And so my first supervisor out of college, Dr. Jamaica Love, she really helped me feel support within my role, because she is also a woman of color, started her career out young, and knew a lot of the challenges that I would run into. Obviously, my experience would be more unique to hers, because we're two different people. But in terms of overall, she knew that there would be challenges. So her goal was to support me through them. So if I had challenges, she wanted me to come to her, so that as my supervisor, she could help me problem solve, address them, and advocate for me.
Excellent.
I really appreciated her and still do. As I advanced in my career, I think I have not felt as supported. And it's interesting because Jamaica told me, because she mentors me off and on, and so she told me one of the times we connected that whenever you go into a new job, ask your potential supervisor, how will you support me as a woman of color in this workplace? And I've always been fearful to ask this because I'm like, they may not want to hire me if I come at them that directly.
That's a great question.
I think she has a point, because after I had challenges working in the place that I was working when I worked for her, but as I moved on, the challenges continued to grow. However, there was a lack of support. And so, it's like, who do I go to? Who do I connect with? Is this normal? How come I see, like, other folks don't deal with these kinds of situations while those of us of color are? So there are a lot of factors, I think, at play. And I don't know if that's like too vague. Did you want to ask any more specific questions about this?
No. I just want your honest answer, and that's a very good answer. In spite of the discrimination, because we don't want to harp on this segment on the discrimination, but despite all of that, what would you say has been your greatest learning experience? And I would like us to end on what you feel effective or successful communication in the workplace would look like or should look like.
Mm-hmm. So I think one of my greatest learnings would be something that you taught me, something that Dale, my husband, constantly tells me to do. Document everything. Keep a paper trail. I think that is pretty critical. Also, to be careful who you trust. And in some cases, keep your enemies close. So I know that those are a lot of learnings, but I would say that those learnings have been important for me. And then what was your second question? I can't remember. I'm sorry.
What does successful communication in the workplace in particular look like, from your perspective?
Okay.
Or what should it look
like? I would say managing up has been critical, to my success in the workplace. So telling supervisors what I need, telling them what I don't appreciate, telling them what I do appreciate, telling them where the ball was missed, not being okay when, I think I told you this before, not being okay in articulating this to them when they tell me that, I have a resting B face or things of that nature. So being able to speak up for myself, being able to know who I am, know my value, and know that my identity does not lie within people liking me or not. I would also say something that has been successful for me has been ensuring that I do support others and that I find spaces where others can support me as well. I think that's critical, in terms of being able to feel as though, okay, because I have the support system, I have energy to now go in and effectively communicate, whatever that might be. I know what battles I need to pick. I know when I should just let it go, because then you have a community behind you that kind of helps shed light as you're walking through the journey with them on what's worth it and what's not. Those things I think would be key for me.
Okay. And we're going to leave it there. And folks, I hope that some of what Jalita has been able to take away for herself can be applicable to you wherever you are on your career path, particularly as it regards communication.